This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Meltdown, how are you tonight? Just as I expected. Guess what? Harmontown is in session, but not just any Harmontown. This is our 50th episode, rather, of Harmontown. Wow. It seems like only yesterday, for the very first time, I announced the mayor of Harmontown. Welcome to the stage, for the 50th time, Dan Harmon!
Your comptroller, Jeff Davis. Wow.
Hello.
The 49 times before now. I never thank you enough. Thank you.
Yeah, you thank me simply by being my friend, Dan. That's all I need from you.
That's good. That's good to know. All right. Please, ma'am, would you please have a seat? It's my girlfriend. Always late.
How many episodes in was she your girlfriend, do you think? I have a terrible memory.
Not for all 50, for sure.
No way, right? Yeah.
50 is a podcast, so yeah.
Oh.
Oh, so it's not 50 Harmontown, just 50 podcast episodes. Because, yeah, we've been doing this for 17 years.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a whole Phantom Zone where we still have like all these things. We keep threatening to release like archives of the old recordings before we even thought this would be a podcast.
Yeah, but we'd sound all young.
Yeah, and we'd be talking about Beetlejuice.
We still talk about Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Back then we were talking about it because it was just about to come out, though.
Right.
We got a lot of stuff to do. Here's item number one on the docket. I'm assuming I wouldn't ask this of any other audience. I feel like if there's 100 people here, the answer might be there's a 2% chance of being yes. Does anyone have a 5-hour energy? Okay. All right. Does anyone have a 20-sided die?
Yes.
Okay, see,
yes.
All right. It's still my crowd, I'm feeling a little sluggish, but I'm going to force a manic behavior. I listen to the episodes, Jeff, I like the ones where I'm manic. I don't like the depressive ones.
Well, why don't we send somebody off to the liquor store down the road?
Because then they'll miss the show. They come here and they want to see me.
But that portion of the show is going to be shitty.
The depressive portion.
Yeah.
And also, it's off-brand, though.
Wow.
Wait, come up here, sir. Come up here.
A gentleman just came on stage, handed Dan what he referred to as an off-brand 5-hour energy.
Yeah. Is that why you didn't say yes when I asked for 5-hour energy?
I wasn't sure if I had it in my bag because I just flew and I wasn't sure if I had it in there.
What's your name, sir?
I'm Chris Dunford.
Chris Dunford. All right.
Yes, yes.
Fake name. And
totally my real name.
just in town to do some raping and... using my ID from Denmark and it says Grape Kirkland Energy Shot.
Should we do a commercial for it?
Thank you so much. Grape Kirkland Energy Shot, the number one energy drink among anonymous rapists.
Hi,
that's a fact.
I'm Alec Baldwin for what's it called? Grape Kirkland?
Grape Kirkland Energy Shot.
For real?
Yeah.
So look, Dan's trying it. Does it taste just as shit as the 5-hour
yeah,
energy?
Yeah, of course. It tastes better. That means it's probably working less, right?
All right.
Well, it tastes good. Yeah, this will only last, at this point, 20 minutes, and then I'll drop dead. I keep compiling these. I've adopted these in place of Adderall street Adderall.
And what was your name again? Barry Dunflum?
Chris Dunford.
Chris Dunford. And where do you hail from, Chris?
I am from Boston area.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Woo! And what brings you to Harmontown?
Well, it was my grandma's 80th birthday this week.
It all sounds so fake. It sounds so fake.
Not a trace of a Boston accent.
Chris Dunford from Boston. It's my grandma's 80th birthday. Yeah. I enjoy potatoes and skateboarding.
Not skateboarding.
I swear to God, I'm not working for Area 51.
I can neither confirm or deny that, actually.
So your grandmother passed away in Los Angeles?
No, she's 80.
She did the opposite of passed away.
Oh, sorry.
She's still going.
She lived for 80 years. I was just,
unless things have changed.
I've been watching a lot of Columbo. I was trying to catch him in a lie.
One more thing. Yeah. When's your grandma's funeral?
I'm sorry.
Tuesday? Don't!
I don't know why I said... You know what, Chris? One thing bothers me.
All right. If she's 80, why are you burying her? Yeah. No, I'm not passing it. Although one thing alarms me. I think I drank one of these 3 hours ago.
For real?
Let's see what happens.
But a different brand.
Different brand, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah. You can mix the... Okay.
So, Chris, you're visiting from Boston to see your still alive 80-year-old grandmother.
That is correct, yes.
That you plan on murdering soon.
Only for the inheritance.
Right now, is she being killed by Ray Milland, and this is to establish your alibi? This is all about alibi establishment, isn't it?
That would have been a really good idea, actually. Yeah. But no, I don't believe so.
I've been watching too much Columbo,
what
you guys.
What was the movie I just saw? It was a Kevin Costner movie. Mr. Collins? What was the...
Mr.
Brooks, yeah.
Yes.
Like what if the way he looked right now was all an elaborate disguise? Like, underneath that, he's Seth Rogen, and he's gonna... Kevin Costner, at one point, to get his daughter out of a murder charge, he boards a plane, puts on a fake goatee, and has kind of a long mullet wig and a denim jacket, goes and hatchet murders someone, comes back. Spoilers.
Yeah, I was about to say, spoiler alert on that
Hey,
one,
here's but... another general spoiler. If Kevin Costner's in it, oh boy. Careful.
Bull Durham, man. Bull Durham's a classic.
Bull Durham
is a good... Tin Cup, N-word, yeah.
Tin Cup is a goodie.
Yeah, I finally saw it.
Yeah.
We had a little Kevin Costner marathon.
It's a golf movie with Kevin Costner and Rene Russo. You are there's no way you're going to like that movie. That's got everything
going. There's no way
you're
going to watch it.
No,
but here's the thing. It's profound. It's Don Johnson.
Don Johnson is an awesome bad guy in it.
Don Johnson's agents in the audience? That's the third time he's said that tonight. He just finished saying it at a pizzeria down the street. So here's your pepperoni. You forgot about Don Johnson. Hey, look, I'm not paid to remember him.
I think that stuff kicked in pretty quick.
It's a profound sports movie. It's not a good movie in the strictest sense.
Well, it's a Kevin Costner movie.
I love the position you've been put in. You're sitting here nodding about Tin Cup.
I just love the homogeneity of the people we bring on stage. Like any one of you could be Harmon.
Chris, how was your trip to Los Angeles? Was it wicked retarded? Hold my wicked hand. Don't be retarded. Come in.
My grandma's actually not from Boston.
Oh, okay.
I was born in L.A., but...
All right, well, okay. Throw me under the bus. Tin Cup's fucking good, Chris. Chris, is it Chris? Carl?
It is Chris.
Chris is okay. It's good. It's a philosophically profound sports movie. It comes down to going for it or laying up. I really identified with the Kevin Costner character. He loves going for it. Mm-hmm. He's self-destructive. He's impulsive. I can't spoil the movie. You have to watch the whole thing.
But right when it comes down to that last moment when he's in the U.S. Open,
don't spoil it for real.
Yeah, I defy you to, if you've never seen that movie, to write the end of that movie better than they write the
end
of that movie.
I defy you to write a sports movie and try to get your way around the idea that in the third act of a sports movie, either the people that you love have to win or lose, and if they lose, it's a fucking bad movie because you love them, so why would they lose? Or they have to win, in which case it's a shitty movie because you knew they were going to win. Like, there's only a couple movies that get around that, and obviously Teen Wolf is one, but...
Are you saying Teen Wolf is mostly a basketball film?
It definitely is. There's how many minutes of that movie are spent with anyone being a werewolf?
Well, all the basketball minutes, and then some other ones too.
No, there's a huge lion's share of that movie is basketball. Doesn't matter. Who cares? It's hitting me.
I saw a tweet today.
Kirkland County's grape shot, whiff of grape shot is hitting me.
Somebody fun facted on Twitter that Space Jam that we really got into last week is the number one basketball film of all time.
By what metric? Money? By your precious money? I don't doubt it.
It's certainly box office.
When you pool together all the fucking ducats like exchange or like plush Bugs Bunnies with holding basketballs on Universal City Walk, who cares? It's vile. It's a vile practice. Make a good movie.
Gene Hackman from Hoosiers is here tonight.
I thought that was my what's the guy from the Scrooge story? Jacob
Marley.
Yeah, like one clap. Like I thought I could only hear that clap. It was like it's my dad in the back. Way to go, Harmon. Way to let Space Jam have it. This is what your career's come to: sticking it to Space Jam. We got a lot to do. What's your name? Curtis Armstrong? What?
Something like that. Yeah.
Carlsbad?
Chris Dunford. That's like my name. It's fun.
Thank you so much for giving me a shot of Kirkland's energy, now infused with grape. It says down here 10% less MSG. 2% of all proceeds go to the defense of the perimeter of our compound. By the Mormons, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Huh.
Chris Humford, everybody.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Oh, yeah, of course. Say whatever you want.
Since she's in the audience, Genevieve, you got robbed. You should have been a gang of America.
Oh, yeah, that's foreshadowing. Genevieve, you got robbed. Remember that phrase.
Sorry about that.
Chris Humford, Mumford. Thank you, brother.
Well, that was a good segue. I think Chris made an appropriate segue. The reason he said that is because there's someone in the audience that I invited down to the show. But I don't want to do what I usually do, which is we bring up a guest and then I spend so much time talking that people get uncomfortable because they're like the person's sitting there. So let me just say a few things about why we're having her up here. Last night,
and you promise when she gets up here, she's gonna do all the talking.
It's gonna be a fucking cold ass interview, man. Cool as a cucumber, man. I'm gonna be like, you're gonna be like, is Carson's ghost leaving his Well, you'll figure it out. You'll figure out how to express your wonderment. I don't think I should have had that 5-hour energy.
Yeah, yeah. Dan, you don't look so good, man.
Weren't there articles about it killing like teenagers or something?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna die.
Yeah, it was invented by the Viet Cong.
God. You know, out of all the things we thought would kill me, it'll be weird tonight when I die.
An assassin with a fake name comes on stage and gives you some homemade shit with a fake label on a re. Woo!
Kirkland.
Wait, he left. He's gone. The guy actually is not here anymore.
Yeah, he's not here. And he had a fake name. Hold on a second.
Whoa! Dear Christ. Harmon accidentally took his shirt off and now is committing to the bit. What is going on? Dan, you know what? You look 50 episodes thinner.
Thank you. It's just a little hot from energy.
Well, I think it's increased blood flow and your capillary networks are fucking freaking out.
I'm all dilated
right now. Yeah. You might be in some need of medical assistance.
I think I was before and I finally got it. This is what it feels like to be alive. I'm just waking up. I'm like Robert De Niro in Awakening. So I'm like, whoa, popsicles are interesting. Freaking out. Put me back. Let's bring her up.
You haven't said anything about it.
Yeah.
You intend to use your cracky fake generic energy drink brain to fucking never let her get a word in, and you go.
That seems abusive.
I'm teeing up a theatrical moment here.
No.
I'm observing the,
All right, so last night, Erin McGathy, my girlfriend and live-in lover, she was just, I don't know why she landed on this. She landed on this TBS series, this reality show called King of the Nerds. It's a reality show. It's very, very, like, straight up the middle structurally. It exactly follows the template of every reality show. But finally, instead of like, who's the hottest? What's up with titties? Who wants to marry a midget? Suck a nut. Joe Middle Road. It's like all variations on like the people that you hang out with at your 10-year reunion. Like, well, what have they got to write a show? Well, there would be no writers, and then we'd do that thing. Remember when we went to the mall that one time? Oh, the mall, friendliest mall eliminations. It was interesting because it's like it's nerds. They called it King of the Nerds. They gathered what they claim to be like the best of the nerds of the country, and they eliminate one per episode. Standard reality show.
Do they answer the question, "What's up with titties"?
I'm ignoring that. They I'm manic from the energy.
You're fucking losing your cool.
This is what we wanted. It's hosted, and I believe it's executive produced, so I think they probably took it out and pitched it, which makes me feel a lot better about it. Curtis Armstrong, a.k.a. Booger, right, from Revenge of the Nerds, and Robert Carradine, a.k.a. Lewis? Was that his name?
Yeah, from Revenge of the Nerds.
The main nerd. It's hosted and executive produced by them, and then they gather these nerds, and they have them in nerd competitions, and they eliminate nerds. But here's the interesting thing about it to me. So I sit in bed last night with my girlfriend. She surfs through the ether sphere, coined it. She finds this show, King of the Nerds. We watch, in the span of 3.5 hours, we watch the entire 8-episode run of the first season. We watch the entire thing. We got nothing to do. It's Sunday night. Fuck it. I sit there and play Minecraft while I'm watching it. We watch the whole thing. And at the end of it, we're like, oh, I hope that girl wins. Like, oh, she didn't win. Spoilers. And then Erin goes, oh, she's following you on Twitter. I tweet her, hey, me and Erin think you should have won. Oh, thank you. Hey, if you're ever in LA, buy you a drink. Hey, I live in the valley. Hey, you want to be on my show? Okay, yeah, see you tomorrow night. 12 hours, in the span of 12 hours, this is either Rupert Murdoch's greatest nightmare or his master plan. I can't figure out which, but I know that reality has changed, and I know that it has nothing to do with reality television, but the television is being made differently, consumed differently. It's interesting. My agent didn't call her agent. She's a fantasy author. She was one of the nerds. She made it all the way almost to the very end and really, really had an incredible, interesting hero's journey. You can buy her books and stuff. We'll let her plug them when she comes up here. This is my introduction of her. Roses are red. Guests are blue. Please welcome Genevieve Pearson.
Hello. Hello.
Sorry, I had an energy drink and then I had another one.
I noticed that. That's like me on my 7th Diet Coke.
Yeah.
You just reach this tipping point.
Yeah.
Where everything goes by in a blur.
And help yourself to help yourself to vodka. All right. There's a million questions I want to ask you. We'll probably have to get it down to like 8. I want to talk about.
I don't see why we can't do a million. That seems logically feasible to me.
What a nerd!
An infinite dimension.
To me, on the top of my line, I'm sure there's people in the audience who actually watched season one of this show and actually would have a million questions about what's up with Alana, what's up with so-and-so. I think the most important thing to talk about, because I've never really talked to someone intimately that went through this whole sausage factory called reality television, which we for now it's going on 20 years we've developed this thing. So like what like, but I feel like I have to give you a specific question about it. I can't just go, hey, talk about take us from the mouth to the anus of this monster through eight episodes. But okay, well, here's a specific question. How long does it take from so you show up, like, is it like boot camp where like you bring you luggage and you show up and...
Yeah, so what happened with me is I found out I was in the top 16 and only 11 people are going to go on the show. But you have to show up for the final audition with everything as though you are going on the show. And so they spend a weekend in what I call, we all called hotel jail. You don't see anybody. You don't interact with anyone. If you go around, you have to wear a blindfold because they don't want you to run into another contestant. You can't have any clue what's going on. And
wait, what is the... I don't understand the reasoning for that.
Because they don't want to spoil the surprise and they want everything to be genuine.
Wait,
while you're
what is
doing
the,
your
what's
final
the surprise
auditions.
At that point? When there's 16 people and five of them aren't going to be on the show, what could they possibly spoil?
They...
That Curtis Armstrong
question.
Is walking around the hallway?
That's a good
or?
Question.
Well, no,
they
I mean,
just don't want you to know who else is going to be on the show. Period.
They want you coming in very blind.
They want the genuine emotion that you have when you first meet somebody.
Okay.
And
well,
if you already
admirable.
Met them, yeah, if you already met them and had formed an opinion, even if it was just passing in the hallway, yeah. So,
okay.
So that's kind of what they're going for. And so that's how we... So that was the first weekend. And then from there, you don't have any contact with anybody you know or love. You get
so
zero.
Your husband, who we just met before the show, Paul.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Paul.
So at a certain point, he goes into shadow lock? Like,
right?
Really? Like,
well,
you're sequestered like a
he
jury?
Left me, yeah, so he left me at the hotel, and that's the last he heard from me until I was done with the entire show.
Which is which is what span of time?
One full month.
Wow. What? That's crazy.
So 1 month with no contact with the outside world at all.
No, you're not allowed to tweet,
no
text,
internet,
email.
No email, no nothing.
Do they confiscate your...
Yes, they confiscated all of our electronic devices.
That's like living
devices.
In the 20th century.
They took my Kindle.
<It's> like,
they took my Kindle and I just about cried. I thought, I can't...
They took your Kindle?
I can't...
There's no way to...
Anybody. No, they thought maybe I could hack it.
You could hack it because you're a nerd, right?
Right. So, yeah,
that makes sense.
Said,
we're
going to
have to crack down on these N-words. Nerds.
Nerds.
Like
just because it starts with N doesn't mean you can't say it. I love N-word Reagan, the first lady during the 80s.
okay, so,
she
well,
was
that's
a nice
intriguing.
One. And by she's one of the nice ones, but by that I mean first ladies.
Why, how did you not win the show?
Wait, what?
I'm saying to her, how did you not win?
Well, because at the end of it, and I'm sorry, this interview is going to involve spoilers. You can't just go watch it. I mean, she didn't win.
Are you
win.
Allowed to do that? Can you talk about the show on a podcast?
It's already aired.
Oh, yeah. Well, then.
The reason is because they did it Survivor style where it mm-hmm. gets down to the last two people, and the final decision is based on popular vote among the people that have all lost.
Ah. Yeah.
They all come back and they all go, remember me, sucka? And then they, you know, it's come on, it's unfair because you went to three like
nerd offs,
which
yeah.
is like the you know that's like the dog pit like mm-hmm. where you send people that you hope get eliminated to rip
yeah.
out the throats.
It's like the gladiator battle of the death.
And right. so three times yeah. she was sent there, and yeah. three times you watch her have to cope with areas outside her nerd expertise mm-hmm. and kind of adapt. And it's very very lovable. And there's a great my favorite moment of the show of the first season is after the debate where you did a fantastic job of debating. They had a competition mm-hmm. where they had to debate about comic book characters, and Genevieve shut down this guy that you know, he accidentally called Frank Miller John Miller or something
yeah,
like that.
Mark
you
Miller
you corrected
speaking.
Him. First
yeah.
of all, it's Frank Miller.
Yeah.
It was but your argument was more cogent. It was more deserving of a win. Mm-hmm. Kevin Smith, who was one of the celebrity judges, goes like, first of all, you got to give props to a chick who can shut a guy down called Frank Miller. But at the same time, you know, I got to give it to him. He edged you out. At a distant point, like Genevieve, her face is in a pillow. Her head's not on camera. All you can see is her hair.
Afterwards, by the way.
And two fellow contestants sitting on her bed, and you just see Genevieve's head buried in a pillow, and it has to be subtitled because it's sob ease. And the subtitles say, stupid Kevin Smith! And then sob, and then, cool. I thought he was supposed to be cool! It's so great, so human, and just so much more merciful to him than he was to you, because, I mean, you can't follow up, you gotta give props to a chick, with not giving her the point, because otherwise that's sexist, because you just said you saw her as a chick. She has to win. You have to fight. If you say, good job, toots.
And then smack me on the ass.
You can't follow it up with, but I love guys. Like... You can barely get away with it. Good job, toots. You got moxie. You're hired. You know, you gotta. We've at least gotten there.
But was he still wearing that douchey hockey jersey that he's always?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. So.
Hey, hockey jersey. That's Enigma. Return to Innocence.
That's been on your mind lately.
Return to Innocence.
I love that song. So a month, and how much do you get paid while you're working for a month off the grid, while your husband may or may not get 9/11, and you wouldn't be allowed to know?
We wouldn't,
because it's not on your Kindle, and even if it was, you're not even allowed to see it there.
Yeah, we couldn't contact anyone. I have an NDA. I'll say that we got a per diem, and it was a meal per diem of $25 for three meals a day. So you could do the math. And that was the total. We didn't technically get paid.
Okay.
Because it was a game show, but we got a per diem.
Wait, you didn't get paid. You're not allowed to say that?
Well, it was a game show, so we're not being paid.
Oh, of course,
as
paying
actors.
You would be unethical.
If they paid us as people who are performers, then we would be admissible to SAG or another guild. Right.
But you knew when you signed up that you were going to be on the show for a month and possibly only get meals paid for that entire time.
Was I aware? Honestly, I thought it was going to be like Survivor, where the longer you lasted, the more prize money you got.
You didn't know that you could just be there for a full month, go right to the wire, and then come home and then zip.
I think they told us about 2 weeks beforehand what it was going to be. Mm-hmm.
Well, and at that point, it's like, oh, okay. Hey, yeah. Guess what? Mm-hmm. Loving husband. I can now I'm in the final 16. Let's take the dignity option where we just like, yeah, of course, you'd have to go.
What's the grand prize? What did the winner take home?
100,000.
100,000 beans.
Which, yeah. I mean, I'm biased. This is from my unique perspective, but what? That's a prize?
100%.
Return to Innocence indeed.
I mean, I guess.
If it's pocket change.
I guess teak patio furniture is getting up there.
Yeah, $100,000 is a lot of money.
Gold filigree that you want to put on your cupcakes. That doesn't come cheap.
Oh, man. My electric bill. I should start a reality show where I just have people come over and just like I don't know, have like bring flashlights and compete for the right to light my life, and then I give the winner $100,000 after a year of doing that. I'd make a profit on what I saved in light bulbs.
What are you, Caesar Augustus?
Not by choice, man. Not by choice.
Yeah, no, it's become a choice.
What am I supposed to do?
You're choosing to make slaves out of people.
Well, oh no, I'm not really doing that.
No, but if you're paying them, then they're not technically slaves.
He's not going to pay these fuckers. He said it's going to be a game show.
It's a prize. I'm giving a prize. I can't pay him, Genevieve. They're on a game show.
Oh, okay.
My hands are tied. Actually, technically, so are theirs, but. That's just part of the rules.
What are you willing to do to be on TV?
Okay, I don't want to be guilty of the crime of letting you go without is there anybody in the audience who has a question, not specifically about the show, or just anybody, raise your hand if you're really burning like a question to ask Genevieve, like whether it's about reality TV in general or the show. Someone's raising their hand back there.
Yeah. All right. Aaron McGathy to the stage.
At the last minute, as far as I was...
So we, everybody that watches reality shows knows that there's two components to it. Basically, there's this sort of pseudo coverage of everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. And then you're constantly cutting to these VH1 talking heads against a green screen. And they seem relevant. They because if you guys were in costumes, then you're in the same costume, and that's probably not faked. Because also emotionally, like very often, people are crying in those talking heads. So when do those happen, and how do they get you into that slaughterhouse?
Well, so what happens is, first of all, I don't know how other reality shows are. I felt a lot of ours was honest to the spirit of the drama. Honestly, they have to edit a lot out and everything gets changed, but the spirit of what happened was pretty honest overall. However, for the talking heads, that was a sort of frustrating situation for me because you might not have realized this. I'm a person who gets really focused on something, right? And I'll be working and I'll be focused in on this. And at some point, they realize that if we pull Genevieve out when she's really focused on something, we get really great off-the-cuff comments because I'm so snappy, I want to get back to work. So I start getting really snappish and kind of grouchy.
Can we do a thing? Can you let me be you?
Okay.
And you be like, is it like a producer with a clipboard that pulls you aside? Can we do a talking head, Genevieve?
Yes, I can do this.
Okay. All right. So I'm Genevieve. Okay.
Okay. Now, do you want a moment in the show, or do you want me to do like? We're here.
Do you want to be Genevieve?
You're catching me at a moment when I'm Genevieve and I'm writing a fantasy novel.
Dan and Aaron, you guys do a scene like you're in the kitchen talking about stuff, and then Genevieve will pull you out as a producer, Dan.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that when it happens? They pull you right out.
No. Well, yes. For the most part,
something happens.
Like, let's say you have drama and you have a fight with somebody.
Okay.
After that fight, the second it's resolved, there's somebody there going, "Come on,
we're gonna go talk about this." All right. So we'll start from. I'm doing dishes.
Well, are we going to do a real scene?
I'm Genevieve.
Man,
Dan and Aaron, just for the sake of this experiment, just try to manufacture a conflict between the two of you.
Just manufacture conflict, yes.
Yeah, just strictly for entertainment.
She broke a dish. Go.
Oh, I broke it. Oh, okay, that's good. Okay.
And it's a dishwashing competition.
Is this dish broken? This is my special Batman dish that I brought.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, were you going to wait for me to find out that it was broken? When did you know it was broken?
I don't know. I just didn't want you to get upset with me. And I,
okay.
CG dick.
Well, Patrick, I only brought one dish.
We're being Dan and Aaron.
What?
Well, Jeff is giving a certain direction.
He just labeled you Patrick, though.
Okay, fine. I'm Aaron. I'm your girlfriend. Jeff just, here's what happened, Dan. So now
what
we can talk
the fuck
about
is going on?
Jeff wanted us
Genevieve,
to
just pull them out of their real lives and give them a fucking.
Okay, this is me giving him the hand signal. Shh, come on.
Oh, okay. All
right. Right.
And now you never talk again.
Okay. Hey.
Wow.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan. How are you feeling right now?
I'm frustrated just because of the broken dish thing. And I didn't understand what the fuck anyone was doing.
Okay, well, will you tell me what happened in your own words?
Well, I had agreed at the forefront that we were going to do like a reenactment.
Wait, let me stop you there. Can you say it in the present tense, please?
Oh, right. I'm agreeing to do a thing that's like a reenactment of a reality show. I want to play Genevieve, and then other people are piping up with their comedy, and it's just a little frustrating because no one's listening. Like, there's not a lot of listening going on, and I'm supposedly on stage with like professional improvisers.
Okay, so you're telling me nobody's listening. Can you say that in a more concise way?
Nobody's listening. I don't know. Nobody's listening. Hello. Nobody's listening.
Okay. That's great. Now, can I take you back to this morning? When you and Aaron, I'm going to remind you that you and Aaron were having breakfast, and she took your eggs. I saw her reach over and grab something off of your plate. Now, how did you feel that? How did you?
I mean, I thought it was weird. I didn't mind at the time.
Wait, can you say the question while you're answering?
When Aaron took my eggs, I didn't think it was a big deal.
So that didn't bother you?
Well, I mean, I guess it could have bothered me.
You don't think
when
that...
Aaron took my eggs, it seemed like it could have bothered me.
Okay, so you don't think maybe it was indicative of the fact that she doesn't respect you as a partner?
Sure, I guess so. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry.
Just restate the whole thing.
When Aaron took my eggs, I felt like it was indicative of her not respecting me as a partner.
We'll be right back.
Very nice.
Wow.
All right, well, Genevieve, you're a fantasy author. I want to be able to plug your stuff.
I have a series of books called The Song of the Silver Tongue series on Amazon, Genevieve Pearson. And right now I have a Kickstarter for HobbyCon 2014 in Pasadena, California. So if you have a hobby or craft you want to show off.
HobbyCon.
It's like an all-inclusive hobby
it's
convention.
It's like a grassroots pre-Gen Con.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's for anybody who's a nerd or a doer, if you like to knit or paint Warhammer 40K. Anybody who likes to do stuff, this is like your Olympics.
All right, HobbyCon, and look for Genevieve Pearson. Google the name. She's got
Amazon.
She's got two books she's very proud of, and one that she's fine with.
Yeah.
And she should have won.
It's okay, brain candy.
Thank you, Genevieve. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's work it out now on stage. I don't want to...
it's not a big deal. Jeff suggested that we played ourselves and simulated a fight.
I didn't say that.
I said that. I was setting... I used you guys' names to set up the thing, but like...
Oh, I see. I thought... Well, then Jeff, I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
A lot of mixed signals.
Look, I'm not here to make friends.
Like, could you say...
I'm here to win.
That's another theme in reality shows is every single person alternating, but when they're on top of the game, they're like, it's not business, it's personal, or I'm sorry, the other way around.
That's what I would do. I'd be like, I don't care about winning. Who said they didn't like me?
So Genevieve, when you were up here right now pretending to be a producer and you got in the middle of that conflict, how did you feel about that?
I'm feeling a lot of stress right now because I don't like having to mediate between a couple.
Okay, can you make it more succinct?
I'm feeling a lot of stress having to mediate between Dan and Aaron right now because I'm in a healthy relationship and I just feel really bad.
That was good. Can you say it again, be a little more succinct, and also add something racist into it?
Well, I can tell that Erin has a fiery Irish temper, and that's why she is having such a hard time.
We'll be right back.
Genevieve Pearson.
Wow, we got to the bottom of the... That's what I was hoping we could talk about, is the reality show source code.
Yeah.
Let's make it an open source project. You at home can make your own reality show now with that source code. All right, let's bring to the stage Kumail Nanjiani.
That is the most rock and roll face anyone's ever made to this song.
Kumail Nanjiani.
I love that song.
I'm gonna call out your name next time I'm making love.
Is it to me?
No, it's just because I like the sound. Kumail Nanjiani!
That's actually what I do.
Yeah.
I say, you've been Nanjiani'd! And then I...
You know what's weird is, you know who else does that? Ben Stein. And it's not... Ben Stein!
Weird, I yell out Kumail while we're making love.
Kumail Nanjiani! Enigma, 1995?
That, you know, all that reality talk is interesting because I just watched, I'd never seen it, the first season of Real World. They were re-airing it.
Oh, really?
And I just watched it, and it's sort of the first reality show.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to watch a reality show where the people don't have, like, reality show personalities
where they
yet.
Weren't, where they weren't raised on a reality
yeah,
show.
Yeah, and they're just sort of being themselves, and it was a very positive thing.
You watch
thing.
Them discover the Flint Rock of eliminating the black guy.
Exactly.
Like, you watch them go, like, oh, Kwan is very antagonistic. You notice that, too? And then afterwards, you watch them institutionalize. Like, what if you did a show where they had to eliminate the black guy?
It's totally amazing, because it's exactly that. It's stuff that happens sort of organically. I mean, there's still cameras. But then later, they're like, all right, we got to do this. At the end of the season, they just decide, and they grab all the cameras, and they start interviewing the interviewers. And it's a very real, organic moment. But I bet at some point, they were like, all right, okay, what you guys do now is you have to pretend that we don't know when you come and steal the cameras from us.
I'm like the Forrest Gump of reality TV because in the 90s, I remember I remember being in Milwaukee in the 90s when they were starting to talk about how they're going to make they're making the show for MTV. It was like, which was still a channel that where they showed music videos. It was like they had Beavis and Butthead and they had some other stuff, but it was like still largely like we were all making jokes like, huh, I'm gonna put some music videos on. But it was the joke was because they were still supposed to make music television. And they were working on this thing, and it was called The Real World. And the whole idea was that these kids were living in this house, and there was going to be cameras everywhere. And it was ironic. Like, everyone that heard about the idea was like, what? What does that mean? Like what, if there's cameras everywhere, then they're not going to... No, what they're doing is they're going to have the cameras everywhere, and they're not even going to have film in them like right away, and they're just going to get used to it. They're going to get so used to it. And it was like this whole thing, it was introduced like this Kubrickian experiment.
Such a crazy thing that it was crazy back then, and now we're like,
crazy.
Yeah.
And but and so then, like, there was a point. So flash forward to me in Los Angeles, Thanksgiving. I just moved. Like, Shrab was there. I was there. I'm sitting at Thanksgiving because we had no family in L.A. I'm sitting at my agent's house for Thanksgiving. I'm sitting next to this weird little Australian guy. And I go, what are you working on? He goes, like, oh, I'm working on a reality show. It's been big in Europe, mate. Shrimp on the Barbie, whatever. I think it was Australian or something. I don't know, whatever.
He sounds like he might have been deaf.
I'm almost reasonably certain, like, piecing together the evidence. I haven't specific. I choose to believe it was Mark Burnett that I was talking to.
Is he Australian?
I don't know, but it was.
Seems like the easiest thing to find out.
I don't want to know.
Yes. He is.
Okay, so sometimes people go, I think you were sitting next to Mark Burnett because I was at my agent's house.
That's amazing.
She was a hot shot. And I was sitting next to this guy with this accent, and he was telling me about the show, this reality show, and he goes like, yeah, it's huge in Europe. They put everybody on an island, and then they eliminate. This was the elimination thing was becoming like a thing, and I was like, what the fuck? That sounds insane. But wouldn't they just eliminate that? How would that work? And he goes, no, but they eliminate the strong people first, and then the middle of the road people kind of take over. But more than that, they're also like eating each other alive, and they're having sex with each other. And I was like, oh, that's going to be a hit. I said it. Give me
you
my
said
money.
That's going to be a hit?
Yeah, I was from Forrest Gump.
You totally are, though, because...
Wait. Turn it off. Then, I'm sitting in my apartment. My girlfriend at the time calls me. She was a studio executive. She calls me, and she would used to call me after a day at work. She would call me from the office because people would pitch her shows, and she would go, "Oy vey, like, what am I? Like, I got to talk to my writer boyfriend. I got to get some release from this insane industry." On the heels of Survivor, the world is exploding. Everything's changing. I remember talking to her from my one bedroom apartment on the
phone. That was your like tipping point for the world changing was Survivor. I thought you were gonna say 9/11. I mean,
Hasn't 9/11 happened yet?
Oh, right.
It was before 9/11.
It's Survivor time.
You realize Al Qaeda did what they did because of reality TV.
I guess that's...
You know that they said, like, oh, I know how we... obviously, we can look...
I hope the story ends with you meeting an 8-year-old Kim Kardashian.
No.
Where she's like, oh, I'm never going to be anything. You're like, you can be whatever you want to be. And then you gave her the confidence to be horrible.
My girlfriend called me up and she said she would call me up every once in a while. She'd go, I just heard a pitch for the show. Buckle up. You ready for this? These people, they're on an alien planet and you know, that one of the guys is in a wheelchair and the gravity is weird, so every once in a while he can walk. And I'd go, ha, ha, ha. Later, Lost would have a character like that. But she calls me up and she goes like, so listen to this. So this is a pitch I just heard for a reality show. A man who's rich, he doesn't have a wife, and but he's rich. So all the women compete to be his wife because he needs a wife so bad. And I'm like 20 whatever year old Dan Harmon going like I'm saying in response to hearing this concept, I'm going, fuck you. No fucking way. Society can't go there. It's impossible. Marriage? The institution of marriage? As I get, this is before Who Wants to Fuck a Midget, literally premiering. Like everything just exploded like a mushroom cloud to the point where one day you were allowed to be like frazzled by any of it, and then the next day everyone had beaten you to the punch.
It's pretty impressive because I just read a thing today that said how marriage, people are getting married less and less, and like almost 50% of kids, something's happening.
Nothing. It's fine. I tipped my cup.
It's
not being
fun.
Clumsy. It's not about
it said
being drunk.
50% of kids born are born out of wedlock, and I think part of the reason people aren't getting married, the sanctity of marriage, whatever that means.
Because they want to be romantic.
But I think because of things like Bachelor and stuff, yeah. Because it has cheapened that thing so much.
It makes it feel like you're kind of a sucker. Like we're moving into like a weird Logan's Run universe where we have three life cycles or something.
Yeah.
Where you go like, oh, who's your first wife? Who's your second wife? Who's your third
wife?
Yeah,
when I got married pretty young and I told my friends and they literally were like, why? That was literally their reaction. And
how
I said,
old were you when you got married?
I got married, I got married.
I know you guys have several weddings.
Yeah, we've had several weddings.
Because you're from Pakistan? Is that a thing?
Because they love weddings.
Okay.
you're
somehow, even though it's racist, you are accurate.
Hi-ya! Well, because you're I'm assuming your gods have eight heads, so I'm assuming you have to.
So eight weddings, one for each head.
Kumar of the North Plains, am sanctifying this marriage. Yep, okay, now we have to go to the Western Territory.
Aesop. We have one wedding.
I lower my sword.
One wedding for each stereotype, so we had to do one for the cab driving god and one for the Saturn god.
I, Shaloub of the cab, declare this wedding.
Good reference. Holy shit. Quick change. Amazing.
Shaloub of the checker gods.
Oh, yeah. I of the Big Bang Theory, the dirty.
Bazinga!
The Fisher Stevens god.
This short circuit is complete.
By the circuits of Johnny Five.
Oh my god. No, this is why. Because we first got married in secret, like just me and her and a couple of our friends at a. Where you go to just stand in line. You literally stand in line.
City Hall or something?
At City Hall. And you get married, and it was like actually a really beautiful, wonderful experience because it's all these people in line, and some of them are pregnant, some of them are super old.
And they're all kind of like...
They all kind of had these things, like everybody cleared out the street, but it was like very... And the guy who married us, the magistrate guy, I don't know what you call him, it was probably like the 30th wedding he'd done, but he was so... like warm, and he seemed genuinely happy and joyous, and it was such a wonderful. And then after that, we went home and watched Four Weddings and a Funeral. You know, like it was a good day. You know,
I'm sorry, I couldn't get over the insensitivity. You don't know if he's called the magistrate. Like, can't you be a little more politically correct? Right? So,
like, judge.
I thought that would be funny after the eight-headed god thing.
So we did that, and then we had a Muslim wedding, and then we had how many? And then we've had three weddings, and then the third one actually was not even.
But then you have to have a funeral.
All right.
Well, that'll come.
All right.
Thanks for the reality check, bro.
I'm I'm jealous. I love weddings. Maybe I should.
Well, but what's interesting was
so many weddings.
Yeah.
I'm gonna convert to Muslim. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. To Islam, I'm a little drunk.
I don't know. That's kind of a sinking ship right now.
Yeah.
Not many people. Once Mike Tyson got on there, we were like, all right, we're out.
What was your third wedding? What was your third wedding?
The third wedding, actually, so we were married, but we hadn't told anybody. And then one weekend, we just moved in New York. We just told our friends, like, hey, we're going to go get married this weekend. And what we did was we stayed at home, and we turned off our phones.
Let's get Emily out here.
Emily! Oh, yeah.
Emily Gordon, everybody.
Hi.
First off, we've never told anybody that we were married in secret.
It could not matter less now.
That's a good point.
We've been married a long time, and you know what? No secrets anymore.
No secrets, you guys. We were married for like a year and a half before.
Before we told anybody. Yeah.
Yeah, I highly recommend it because you don't get people being like, oh, you guys are newlyweds. Isn't that weird for
you? Well, people still do that, and you're like, fuck you. You don't know how dumb that is.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, for us, we've been living together for so long that getting married wasn't really a big difference.
That's the real truth, is that once you live with someone...
I got married, how old was that, 28, 29, somewhere around there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that should be the new definition of marriage. Granted, this is very L.A. of me to say, because we live out here in this culture where... People come out here to pursue their dreams. Your dreams don't come true, so people get married out here when they're 40 and they have kids when they're 50. But
that's exactly right.
I married Schraub and Kate, and like they had been together for so long and living together for so long before it that your first question is, what's the point of getting married? And then your second question is, like, what could be more romantic than the decision to get married by two people who don't have anything to gain or lose by getting married? And I think that we have to move forward into a society. We have to. it's a high-stakes game. We also probably have to stop making lasers that destroy the Earth. But we'll get around to this. No, look it up. We have to move into a world where marriage is no longer looked at as moving across a threshold, like a thing that has to be done where you're like, I wonder what it's going to be like after that.
Yeah.
Because the answer is, it's going to be the same. So if more of this for 30 years isn't your cup of tea, don't marry this person.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a very romantic thing because it's literally just saying to the world, like, I'm going to be with this person forever. And it was a very romantic... And even though we've been married... 3 times,
mm-hmm.
I never actually got to propose to you. So I never
got
to.
Are you planning something? What are you planning?
No.
Oh.
Well.
Emily, will you marry me?
I will.
Yay!
Faith.
We did it.
Forgiveness.
It took us 50 episodes.
Destiny. Forgiveness.
Emily Gordon, everybody.
Destiny. Wow. Devotion.
Oops. Fourth wedding.
Yeah, the right way to put it, I thought, was when I asked Schraub, why is he marrying Kate? You know, he said, so to paraphrase him, is like, I ran out of ways to make it clear how much I love this person. You know, it's which is, I think that's the right way to go. Like don't marry him until like it's absolutely the only thing left.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
Forgiveness. Vacuum. Poopies. All right, let's come on. We got a time
yeah,
flies.
Let's keep this train going. Let's bring Spencer up to the stage, shall we?
You don't usually see a proposal after the wedding, but you never see a proposal after 3 weddings.
Yeah.
Spencer Crittenden, everybody. Woo! Welcome them to the stage. Hey.
Oh, shit.
Someone proposed.
What?
Spencer, what's new in your life since we saw you last?
Like I told you guys, I've been listening to that song Steppin' Out by Joe Jackson.
And I was unable to download it in time for Showtime tonight. But
I really appreciate the thought.
How does that one go?
Can you sing a bit for us?
It goes, ba-da, da-da-da-da, 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 bring.
Are there words?
Yeah.
How the words go?
Now... The mist across the window blocks the light, but nothing hides the color of the lights that shine.
If what you just did is not on Tumblr in the next hour, I'm going to be very disappointed. I want full animated, fully recreated music video.
I want to hear a mashup between Enigma's Return to Innocence and Joe Jackson's Steppin' Out.
Steppin' back to Innocence.
Do you guys remember that we listened to that and other Enigma songs on the way to Medieval Times? On repeat? Yeah. It's dumb, I'm sorry.
What is the deal with Enigma? Like, is it one guy? Is it 100? It could be anything.
Yeah, no.
It's at least one guy, one cave, 40 mics.
Is it? It sounds like it could be. Are they white? Are they?
You could put Enigma and Enya in a lineup, and I wouldn't know what was going on.
Well,
and also they had that song that's like it's ubiquitous. Like whenever anybody like.
Boop boop boop.
Yeah.
The sadness.
I tried to do an impression of it. Like,
yeah, it was sadness part one. Sadness Part 1, which is the cockiest name to a song ever. Yeah. There will be more.
Anytime anyone was doing anything that involving gauze, candles, Duvetyn, and S&M, like in any HBO show.
Yeah. It's like Krista Berg's song of A Lady in Red, The Beginning.
Whenever I hear Enigma, I picture those moles who have never seen light.
Yeah, just like walking out.
They have no idea. They're blind moles.
I picture a kid eating mango for the first time.
Oh. What a image. Beautiful.
Mango's I picture my mom's pussy, but...
but in a good way?
Full disclosure, like, I picture that also, like when I hear a variety of songs. Especially the Rocky theme.
His mom's pussy is a staircase.
It's specifically, it's a marble staircase.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Spencer!
Hey, guys.
All right, well, let's get these...
Well, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, this is terrible, and I am terrible.
Picture my mom's pussy blah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, no, but
Do you know what your mom's pussy looks like?
A marble staircase, right?
If anybody should.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what he said, I thought.
That is what he said.
Okay. Listening skills. See, I'm listening to you, Dan.
Thanks.
Yeah. I didn't write an intro sequence. So, I mean, I wrote, but I didn't write an intro.
Bro.
Yeah, I can try. I distinctly remember you holding a dragon's dick open so that arrows can be shot.
Well, then, but after that, I've already chopped the dick off, and I kind of called dibs on it, and it's in my bag.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, definitely. I remember that.
Why don't you just freestyle one?
Right.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, just try it.
Okay. No right or wrong answers. Do you want to get the character she's passed out as we do this?
Were you listening to that song in lieu of...
I know this is unorthodox, but can I have Genevieve be my advisor on this? Similar to a nerd war? Yeah. Or nerd off.
Nerd off.
If you guys haven't seen King and the Nerds, check it out. So I am a lady with arrows.
Can I bring Celeste up to help me out right now, please?
She's off spending $100,000 on...
All right, so Spencer...
whoa. You're spilling.
She just keeps
doing it. I'm sorry.
She's like a Ronan Martin's laughing character.
Yeah, how much vodka...
How many people are going to get that reference here? Yeah. Okay, super nerdy.
Fun fact, did that this morning with a cup of water as I woke up.
When it keeps falling out of your cup, that's God saying, stop drinking. doesn't need it.
It counts with water, though, too. It's like, stop drinking water. It's just a general
I'm just clumsy
sign.
Yeah, but
nobody spills two glasses of water.
A doctor told me when I was 8 years old that I had a problem with my ears that made me clumsy. And
did he really say that?
Yeah, I had a doctor who diagnosed me with a severe ear imbalance, which meant that I couldn't measure space.
How convenient.
Yeah, exactly. And then my mother told me later that she told him to tell me that.
On that dark note, let's enter the cave of Dungeons and Dragons with Spencer.
Oh my God,
Spencer! Oh, on a rare, unwritten freestyle moment, 50 episode anniversary of that's not anniversary. It's just 50th episode.
Last time, our heroes were scouring the depths of the ruins of Mershul, on the faraway plain of Twyla, the Twilight Forest. After opening a large chamber door, they entered a treasure room that appeared to house several treasures and perhaps the fabled Soul of Growth that they had been seeking so earnestly. It was just then they heard a voice echo throughout the chamber that they saw a dragon come into view and immediately began combating it. After a time, they had thought they had gotten the upper hand on the dragon after paralyzing its dick and doing other things to its dick. Together, the group shot arrows and commanded magical scorpions. Sharpie tried to get it to fall over laughing, but that didn't go so well. Grasping its dick firmly, Quark tried to get Mulrain to fire arrows directly into the beast's urethra, but that failed as well. Grasping a bear trap, Krista Berg managed to snap off the tip of the dick with his trusty trapsman skills. After which, Sharpie cast Jump on himself, leaping cinematically onto the back of the beast. Throwing his flaming sword towards the wizard, Sharpie reared back and stabbed it directly into the beast's back, killing it in the last blow. The group stood around to survey the corpse and the treasures they had unlocked.
Whoa! Wow. You don't ever need to write one.
Yeah.
I think I still will. Like I don't know. I didn't feel comfortable with that.
They call that crossing the Harmon threshold. You just found out, oh, I don't need to do anything.
Well, that's that was my wanting to write.
Yeah.
Well, you've graduated.
Yay.
Pretty soon you'll be taking baths instead of showers.
Oh, all right, so once again, remind us of our immediate surroundings, please.
So you were in that room. There was like a big staircase that led up to where all the treasure was, but that there was a huge crack. That's where the dragon came out of, and you were before the dragon. You were going to climb up there with rope, but now he's dead, so like you don't have anything threatening you, and so you can look around or whatever.
There's two statues, right?
There was this two giant statues, yeah, at this point. No, there was three, actually, and one of the arms fell off because you tried to climb the statue. You silently, Mulrain, and it knocked off its arm because
it was made of vodka.
She spilled the arm.
It's like Chunk and Goonies, just anything. Hold this map.
I am like Chunk and Goonies. True. Whose turn is that?
At this point, we're not in combat time, so you guys can just do whatever you want. Yeah. I mean, you guys just killed a dragon.
Dragon dick party!
Guys, it's my dragon dick. There's a $10 cover.
This is per Genevieve's recommendation, which is so good. Can I cut off the dragon's horn?
Yeah, definitely. It actually has two horns.
Can I cut off both of them? I put my swords on my legs and on my arms, and I do like a slide. Is that a thing?
She spills the knives to the floor.
Oh, the way that you're looking at me, Dan.
You put swords and knives on your arms?
They're double bladed.
On my legs, and I get at the forehead, and I slide down like spread eagle. Does anyone
don't try to cut off the neck?
No,
I already did it.
No, I don't get it.
Yeah. Yes.
Like a scissors?
Like a cutting kick.
Like I have a, I'm
Why
using
don't you try
my...
to saw it off?
I mean, women are different because women have more strength in their legs than they do in their arms. So it's more at the top of my mind than my arms. So I put blades. Can I put my... How many swords do I have?
You have
a thousand?
One, you have okay. A long sword.
Okay.
You have one long
sword. Okay.
Well, but you're tied to your foot. Do you want my rope? I have rope.
I've got like three. I got like three swords. I could just. I tie all of my swords to Mulrain. So she's bristling with swords.
I tie a dragon's dick to her thigh.
It's like Dead Poet Society. Everyone's just giving her swords.
Okay, so Spencer, my idea is that I have a sword tied to my left calf.
Okay.
And a sword tied to my right calf.
Where's the dick?
Where's the dick? The dick is on my head like a top hat, like an Abraham Lincoln
like
top
hat. Like a bachelorette party?
Like a Dr. Seuss, like a rave hat.
Yes, like the shortest marriage bachelorette party ever. I have a giant dick attached to my head. And I put out my legs and I slide down to cut the horns off at the same time.
It feels like there's a more efficient way to achieve this.
hey, Chris.
But it's one move. But
it's not about efficiency.
I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to do it in one move.
It's not about efficiency, that's right.
This is about having a party.
No, it's not. I'm trying to do it in one move. Is there a different...
Genevieve? Get both of the horns in one move?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, see, now this makes slightly more sense. I hear you, I hear you.
I want to get them at the same time,
yeah.
And my arms aren't as strong if I put them on my
legs. Aren't the
tyings
like
down.
Different turns?
What's up? I mean, like I said, you're not really in combat time. You guys can do whatever. So, I mean...
Yeah, so I want to do is be awesome.
I want to go swords. With Chris DeBerg. I want to transcribe as much of this blood spell book as possible.
You want to study this book?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Or Genevieve suggested a sword cartwheel, if that's a possibility.
A sword cartwheel. Either way. Legs, cartwheels, ropes.
I mean, it's truer to my own spirit if I just slide down with the
Huddling
two.
Together, Krista Berg and Sharpie pore over the book, trying to study, while Mulrain ties blades to her legs.
Hey, what's she trying to do?
Doesn't matter. Read.
All right. So I read the book.
Okay, you guys are reading the book. And
I get naked while this is happening, walk up to the top of the steps with my lute and lay down in kind of like a Greek, like urn pose, like just nude on my side, and watching them read the book and watching Mulrain tie swords to herself, I just start like serenading the whole thing.
Well, actually, your serenade is so powerful that everyone stops what they're doing and is paying attention to your sermon. It's not a sermon.
Oh, the dragon's dick is severed. Guys, go ahead, do what you were doing.
Did you have something to say? Did you have something?
I was just quietly being nude and playing my lute. Sorry.
You're not being quiet and playing the lute. There's no.
Okay, I play the Lady in Red, a song that nobody will notice.
No.
Mulrain climbs to the top of the dragon and doing the maneuver she had mentioned earlier, which I still not fully understanding, manages to not. It's very awkward and strange. Arms are used for doing things. Legs are used for moving people around.
No, legs are...
I take the dragon dick back.
Legs are strong.
They can be strong, but they're not...
Ladies' legs are strong.
They don't handle swords.
Thank you.
They don't...
Swords attached to her thighs!
I take the dragon dick back. I take the dragon dick back from the head because I think it's going to get injured.
Yeah. Well, that happens. But I mean, you jump on and you do your thing, and that knocks the horns off.
Yeah, fuck you.
You realize that, or I mean, you didn't realize. You always
Not
knew
really.
That
Not
dragon
really,
horns
fuck you.
Are quite
fuck you,
magical.
Dragon.
It's okay. Fine. Fuck everybody. I don't care. I do, yeah, it's true.
I don't know. I do feel like after this experience, I have to go home and think about physics a little bit more.
I honestly...
That was the first thing I thought.
Yeah, I like that
I'm good at picturing stuff in my head. Yeah. Like,
I mean, wolf's jaws are strong. You don't use them to, you know, lift up a manhole cover.
Well, I just know that my legs are stronger than my arms, and I wanted to cut off both of the dragon's horns. And that is what I did.
Are we still reading the blood book?
Yeah, no. You guys are reading. It's actually going to take some hours. I mean, but yeah.
We have hours.
We take those hours.
Yeah, definitely.
It seems like that dragon thing took hours, right? Like,
it didn't take hours. In combat time, that probably... I mean, in actual, like, time, it probably maybe took, like...
probably not even 10 minutes.
You guys questioned it. I just wanted to do it, and you wanted to find out the logistics of it. It's not my fault.
Nothing producers. Matters.
I'm not here to make friends.
Woo!
Just kidding. I'm only here to make friends.
But yeah, so you guys are studying. You're up there. I mean, you're in a room full of treasure.
Okay. I examine the treasure. I because they're all fucking about doing book reading and dragon slicing, I go try to get my grubby little fingers in the...
Are you still naked?
I'm still naked.
It's important. Well, you know, it's weird. In D&D, people often get naked.
Yeah.
Like, not even for any reason other than to not have clothes. But anyway, you open a treasure chest.
I feel like the overlap of people who play D&D and who get to get naked around other people is maybe not as huge.
That's true. It's wish fulfillment.
So in the nude,
And no one laughed at me. Is the unspoken.
Wish fulfillment.
Yeah, that's the unspoken part after
let's,
every...
Let's all literally get naked right now, everybody.
I'm in.
Whoa! All right, so I examine the treasure.
You examine the treasure. I said you're opening a treasure chest. Okay. The small chest opens with a soft click. On the soft plush interior, you see four identical silver rings. A small inscription reads, Ring of Armor.
I put it on.
You feel as if you have, you know, you're stronger at
That's
blocking
one of them?
Attacks.
One of them says Ring of Armor?
They all say, well, I mean, one inscription on the entire box says Ring of Armor.
First of all, before I put that on, I read all of the names off. So, Ring of Armor.
Ring of Armor.
The other one?
They're all the same.
That's all.
Oh, they're all Ring of Armor.
They're all Rings of Armor.
I take one Ring of Armor and I put it on, and I look down at the two guys reading books, and Mulrain slicing dragon horns off with her calves, and I go, everybody! And I throw them in a perfect throw. They all, and I go, hey, everybody, stick a finger in the air. And then I do a little pirouette, and I cascade them down. They perfectly land down on each of their fingers.
Yeah, one of them does. The other
it's not what I said, Spencer. I
Fuck
said
Fuck you, dude. Why didn't you just hand them to us? Because now we have to go around looking for a ring.
Why don't you just saw off a dragon's horn and not make a big thing about it?
Oh, God.
Because I could do it in one swipe.
I know.
I
was inspired by you, Mulrain. I saw her doing it fancy.
I heard it go in here. I think it's around here.
Okay, so one lands on who?
Kumail gets it. The other two fall.
Who's Kumail?
That's awesome. No one's ever done that to me.
Extra points.
Yeah. You gain 300 experience.
Wow.
That's true. Nice. You can take that to the bank.
What's a bank?
Yeah.
I've never heard of
Sharpie,
that.
Sharpie gets points.
Dost thou mean a money changer?
Can we bend over and just pick up
dwarves
the ring?
Dwarves are celebrated bankers. Yeah, you do.
All right, so I bend over and I pick up the ring.
People have rings
I pretend
now.
That I caught it with my finger.
Thank you, Mulrain.
I guess I could just read off other treasures if you want to just look for treasure, save some
We're
time.
Still reading the book, right?
That's true, yeah, other than you caught the ring.
Okay, I fashion a cart and pretend it's Shaptia Drop, and I just start running around. Or supermarket sweep. I just start supermarket sweeping it around the treasure chamber.
Okay, you find...
I tie two carts to my legs.
It's going to slow you down, though. It's going to slow you down.
Sorry, thank you.
You find a magical lyre of building.
I put that in the cart.
The magical lyre of building?
A building, like a small like lyre.
Like a musical instrument.
Yeah.
Hey, what's in my bag of holding?
Most of your stuff.
Dungeon snap.
No, that's just how it works. Like, they holds, you know, a lot of stuff, so it's just all your most of your stuff's in it.
Well, do you have any idea how much more shit I could put in it?
A fair amount. I'd say it's less than half full.
All right, well, I hand that off before I resume blood magic research. I give it to Peabody over there and say, hey, fill this up.
Who's Peabody?
My friend, my lifelong friend, Quark.
Quark, yeah. I'm Peabody?
Huh. It's my nickname.
I also attempt to call him Peabody in order to affect more...
Yeah.
Hey, Peabody.
What is it, Snickerdoodles?
That's not... Call me Chris DeBerg. In full. All
right. What is it, Chris DeBerg?
Peabody, also do what you're doing for Quark. Sharpie.
Only my friends can call me Peabody. And you
know
what?
Okay, Peabody.
You're my friend, I knew it. All right, so I do what he said.
That was heartwarming.
It really was.
I'm happy.
You also find the goggles of minute seeing.
Like binoculars?
Well, no. I mean, they're like little goggles that strap onto your head.
They just see sand.
I mean, you don't know what they just see until you put them on.
I'm small. Can I have those? I want those. I crawl into holes and like do minute seeing.
Yeah, I don't want that shit.
Okay.
All right.
Can I inspect magic on the dragon's horns?
They're intensely magical, and you feel as if they can be used to power up spells or maybe make magical items or potions.
Can I use that on the magic penis to see if it has anything?
Wait, use what?
Whatever she used on the horns to find out how good they are.
Oh, yeah, you didn't detect magic. You just know that. I'm sorry. Yeah, you can't detect magic, but yeah. Sorry. So you can do that on the penis, and that is also magical, and less so than the horn, but still magical.
So it's less magical plus I have to hold a penis.
Yeah. And it's pretty hefty.
This is a heavy penis.
Yeah, it's a burden.
So as far as the spells go, I don't know what spells are available per these horns. Can I use them to make everybody in the party like me a lot?
Well, you don't know. You aren't actually like a proper like wizard by
trade. You're not a proper wizard.
Truth, dungeon master.
So how do I figure out what
I said what I am, and that's not an insult.
Yeah, but it's exciting.
Okay. No, it was awesome.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Well, I was doing a bet. I'm sorry, guys. How do I find out what I can do with these horns?
You'd have to talk to a wise sage or someone who knows much about dragons.
Is that me?
No.
Hey, it's not me.
Would it be Sharpie, or he's not a sage, he's a mage?
Nah, you are a mage. I mean, you know that.
I only know how to kill him.
Well, can I present the horns to Sharpie, and maybe he'll have some ideas?
Yeah, definitely. Sharpie, you actually know how... Oh, I should mention this. You all level up.
I can't. Level up.
I didn't have a queued up.
But now that you're leveled up, you know brew potion. That's a feat you have now. So you know that dragon's horns can be used to make potions more powerful. So like. Okay. Its effect would be heightened.
Okay, so I present the horns to Sharpie.
Hey, we're trying to read here. I'm just being a dick.
I go around Christaberg, and I present my horns to Sharpie, and I say, I don't know what to do with these. Do you know?
Oh.
I don't know what to do. I'm such a dumb little archer. I have no idea.
What the fuck is going on?
I immediately get an erection.
What is happening?
So weird.
What?
A weird perversion of, you know, women think that men like dumb women. Like
Celeste's thing at the end of King of the Nerds. Check it out, guys. Anyway, I'm doing a parody, but
total turn on.
Okay, all right. Can
hey,
I?
Hey, bro, are you.
I redo that. Sharpie.
Yes.
I have in my possession two dragon's horns.
Put them in one of the bags.
All right, first of all, don't tell me what to do.
Okay.
Second of all, I'll put them in one of the, what did you say?
Bags.
Why? Are you able to measure them?
Because they contain things. What the fuck?
But I want you to tell me what they can do. I hear that you can tell me what they can do.
They make potions more strong.
I pretend to read the book and not listen to the fight.
All right.
Hold on. Can I talk to a producer?
I'm flummoxed by something. I want to stand atop the nearest mound of treasure and address my people.
You ascend a pile of 25,000 gold pieces.
Does anyone remember how we got here?
I remember.
Yes.
My dad needed something. We
wanted to get treasure and fortune. We got it. I think.
No, we wanted to figure out what that soul thing was. What was that thing?
The soul
you
of growth.
You were looking for the soul of growth. Yeah, that's true.
The soul of growth. And there was shards for a while.
What have we become? Look at us.
It's like a Stephen King novel. We are the monsters. We are the dragons.
We've lost our minds.
I thought everything was going cool until that you boogie coochie poogie poogies.
I mean, that was weird by any definition, yeah.
It's not weird because Sharpie and I have had a romantic relationship, and maybe that's our language. Maybe that's how we express sexuality to each other. Not weird.
Sharpie didn't seem to be on board.
I'm fine with it.
You're right. I'm just trying. Let me try something else. Hey. I'm Cork.
Bang.
Are you interested in these horns?
Wait, isn't he on top of the treasure pile now?
He's on top of the treasure
pile. So you're up there.
So can we take all this treasure and bone the fuck out? Can we guess it?
Yeah. All right. That's always been an option.
Let's get this loot and press forward. The soul of growth is not going to grow itself a soul.
Well, what the hell did we do? We wanted the soul of growth. What was the soul of growth? It was dragon?
I left you guys because you guys were dicking about in the woods, and I said, I'm going to go try to become a better person. I sought out after this thing. And you
is
guys...
this the place where the Infinifish landed?
Yeah.
So we're not even on goddamn Earth. Like, no. We're in some weird... Is anyone... what are we doing with our lives? We got eaten by a fish.
I have a script due.
That's long since gone.
We got dragon horns. We got all the money we can carry. Now you guys can read that book. We can cast some spells. And
it's
some
been
potions.
A good day.
It's been a good day.
It's been okay. It's been an okay day.
Yes, it has been a good day.
Thank you.
Who's got swords all over her legs? All right, so let's take stock. Let's fucking find the most likely exit and get down to biz.
The exit of the soul of growth? Then we have to exit the world that the Infinifish vomited us onto.
But
then we have to... Like,
that's actually, I just wanted to know what was in the horns. You can't tell me what's in the horns?
Well, they make magic stronger, magic potions stronger.
God damn potion boosters.
Then let's just leave this area. Stop freaking out.
I'm sorry. I'm having adventure phobia. Like, I'm starting to feel like I'm...
Adventure phobia.
I pretend like I'm asleep.
Stop that!
I strike out in the direction toward. There's a light source, right?
Isn't Am I the one who knows where the soul of growth is? I led
them
here.
Yeah, it's supposed to be in these ruins.
Oh, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Isn't this all there? Haven't we explored all the ruins?
No.
Yet?
He's still treasure chopping.
Ah ha!
Why don't you pretend this is a wedding and go for it? Where do we go?
We gotta go back up because we'd fallen down, right?
I ascend the staircase to look for a doorway.
You don't see a doorway. However, you do see a massive sarcophagus surrounded by more treasure that you haven't picked up yet.
I open the sarcophagus.
Whoa, Texas. Jesus Christ. There could be a giant fucking mummy in there. Like,
we just killed a dragon. We got horns. We got potions. We're fucking.
None of that means that we want to fight a mummy now.
Okay, I examine the writing. Is there any writing? Or
can we look at this
I
thing?
Should mention you're illiterate, but yeah, there's no writing.
Jeff's nightmare. Well, are you just pretending to read?
Spencer.
Oh, it says no mummy here.
Spencer, say the word Jeff.
Jeff.
Who's Jeff?
I really don't.
No.
No shit.
I pointedly clear my throat and pull out a pair of prop glasses that I keep on me and put them on, and I examine the coffin.
Again, no writing.
What?
Do coffins normally have writing on them?
Hey,
we're not coffin experts.
Do sarcophagi? I wouldn't know. Hieroglyphs are technically writing.
What's this thing made out of? Wood, stone, obsidian?
I'd say obsidian.
Are there any other doorways in this room that we're in?
No. There was the one you came in.
All right, well, let's open it.
I open the coffin, the sarcophagus.
Opening the sarcophagus, you see a bizarre sight. Resting in the coffin is a skeleton wrapped in plants.
God damn it!
Thin tendrils are wrapped around the body, covering it in ivy leaves and small blossoms and flowers, and all manner of different strange foreign plants cover its body. On the breast of the skeleton is a perfectly spherical amber orb. You can see that inside the orb is a strange plant that is changing states between seed, seedling, shrub, tree, and flower. The inside of the orb is always shifting, and if you touch it, you get the sense of vitality.
The soul of growth.
Because I literally got chills down my spine. Just unironically excited.
Oh, snickerdoodle.
Just, okay, that's not, no, it's not catching on. Nobody's on board. Okay, that's another whiff.
All right, I say, Sharpie, you're kind of the Hannibal of this A team. Why don't you go up there and
all right, play the right song when I pick it up. I pick it up.
You pick it up. You feel nature's magnificence filling you. It's obviously a powerful artifact. You get the sense that it's the soul of growth or something.
It swirls like well water in my head. But if I focus, I can feel it. A million thoughts of a million people calling out,
"Hi!"
D&D cliffhanger! Thank you, Genevieve. Thank you, Aaron McGathy, Kumail Nanjiani, Spencer Crittenden, one more time. We did it. We found the soul of growth.
Yeah, we don't want to go down the road of picking and choosing, but I'm going to say worst D&D chapter ever, right?
No, that was a shit fest.
Just by any metric. Like if you measure it by how much we got done, zero.
Nothing.
We hung out.
We went shopping. Nothing happened.
I imagine watching Desperate Housewives or whatever you call it, like the Real Housewives of Orange County or whatever.
Usually people say, we look for treasure, and I say the names of the treasure, and people don't interrupt me, and I finish explaining all the treasure.
Oh, baby, that's not a critique on you. Don't.
I know. No, I don't think it is.
It's a critique on us.
If you want more things to happen.
Oh, no. Baby. That's not. Everyone knows that you're good at what you do.
I'm trying to help.
No, well, don't. I mean, we're unhelpable. We're the worst. Sometimes we're just.
That was madness.
I still enjoy it. Just to be clear for everyone, I think it's okay.
You know, like my friend Neil Goldman used to say on Community, like a bad piece of pizza is still pizza. That's what we would say. You know, you read the Onion AV review, and you go, whatever. Still an episode of Community.
Yeah, I mean, after playing D&D a million times, I'm still intimidated. I'm going to do something wrong in some way, but like it was still.
I assume you're over that anxiety now. I think we've all leapt headlong over that.
Well, no, I still feel like I'm going to fuck shit up. Even when I do something bold, like open a sarcophagus, everybody freaks out and tells me I'm a bad person.
That's just me. I'm a chicken. Like I just want to look at things.
Well, can I speak to that? Is that you're from an age in which D&D was very much about torturing players by the dungeon masters. Like you'd walk into the room and the door would eat you. And if you kill the door, then the floor will try and strangle you. And if you do that, there's a treasure chest. And if you open that, that'll bite your face off. Like that's literally how it goes. So it makes a lot of sense that your like style is very cautious.
Well, you're acting like it's like a generational thing. Like,
it what is. No.
25. After the spin doctors, we started like. You walk up to an owl bear and you're like, "Fuck you! What are you, an owl or a bear?"
A lot of those monsters, like there was a thing that was a tree stump with a rabbit on it, but if you approached it, it would eat you.
Yeah.
Those got phased out because they weren't fun; they were just torturous.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
like Gary Gygax loved that shit. So, but I mean, the game evolved, it kind of.
You know, I talked to him on the phone.
No.
Is he dead?
I think, yeah, he's dead. He's, yeah.
I talked to him on the phone once.
Yeah,
Rob Schraub made a comic book called Scud the Disposable Assassin. When I was your age, young man, We did an issue of the comic book that was like a special, like Scud went to D&D world for an issue, and we wanted to have the cover be like. And I talked to Gary. We were looking for a specific artist. The guy, what was his name? Teasley? Beasley? Easley?
Jeff Easley.
Yeah. We wanted him to like the old school like first edition Dungeon Master's Guide. Like we wanted that style of oil painting for the cover of the thing. And the only guy that had that guy's number was Gary Gygax. I had to kind of talk to him on the phone and just talk to him for a little bit. And I think he died a week later. I don't know. Also, you know who else died? Kinwa Akibi, author. He's dead. He's another guy that I've been bringing up lately. Who should I bring up tonight? Like, randomly. I think half of the members of Enigma are gonna are in trouble. There's going to be a weird private jet crash.
All right, so Harmon, 50 podcast episodes.
50 podcast rap.
Oh, yeah?
All right.
Which beat do you want?
Let's see, how about...
Do the... I don't know, man.
Yo, breakdown, 50 episodes. Fucked your mama so hard, I dropped a million loads. Put my dick inside her pussy can tame. I fucked your mama until she was lame. Broke her left leg and her right leg too. Fucked your mama and I came white blue. Stuck her to the wall, mailed her to China. Fucked your mama and it couldn't be finer. Fucked your mama on the Great Wall. Fucked your mama with both balls. Fucked your mama in all of Japan. Fucked your mama so hard. Fucked her hard as I can. Fucked your mama in the ocean. Fucked your mama in the sky. Fucked your mama and I don't know why. Yes, I do. I like to fuck her. Fucked your mama like my name was Chris Tucker. Mad TV. Fucked your mama hard. Fucked your mama like my dick was a shard of power. Every hour. Fucked your mama every minute like a flower. Blooming from the dirt to the sky. Fucked your mama in her thigh. Between the two of her thighs, in her pussy, in her thighs. Fucked your mama, made her pregnant. Fucked your mama and eggnog. Fucked your mama and I made her pregnant. Fucked your mama New Year's
segment.
Sorry.
50 episode rap.
50 episodes. Fucked your mama and I made her pregnant. Fucked your mama for a new segment called Fucking Your Mama, the way I do it. Fucked your mama like my name was Ray Pruitt. It's a friend of ours. It doesn't.
Yeah. Come on. That's, I mean, that's, like, first of all, yeah. But...
Okay, so that was a milestone because that was like. That was the weakest reaction to a rap, and also the best I've ever rapped ever. That was the most incredible rap I've ever heard, and I'm me. Which is good. That's great. That means you guys expect me to rap that good.
Keep it going. Stay in the zone, then, man. Stay in the zone. We're gonna end this thing.
50 episodes. Fuck your mama on the shit. Fuck your mama like a pig and a cow. Fucked your mama and I don't know how. Yes, I do. I'm gonna tell you right now. Fucked your mama. Shit, fuck. Speed the plow. David Mamet. Fucked your mama. Hold on. Fucked your mama in the space and time. Fucked your mama with a little squeeze of lime. Fucked your mama with the citrus seed. Fucked your mama because that's all I need. I'm your daddy. You're my son. I fucked your mama just for fun. I left you behind with a rock. I said, lift it when you get old enough to put on socks. When you lifted it, you found some shoes. Fuck your mama, that's what we do. You gotta fuck your own mama now. Fuck your mama like an ox pulls a plow. Fuck your mama because my name's Ulysses. Fuck your mama, I don't need... Shit.
Ready? Break it to you.
Oh, yeah.
Wait.
Oh, feel it. Wait till you feel it.
Hold on. Vincent Price.
50 episodes of a podcast like creepy crawly spiders crawling on your skeleton soul. A million horrors and locked in 1,000 coffins, meaning that each coffin has 1,000 horrors in it. The distribution of horrors to coffins. Absolutely inefficient. The island of Cyprus never knew such horrible catastrophes. He's rapping about fucking your mama. Thank you, Vincent. Breakdown. 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 Everybody's having a breakdown. 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 Break it down. Build it up. Break it down. Build it up. Then break it down. Break it up like a little town. Build it up from the street to the sky. But your mama. Hi.
Thank you for coming to Harmontown, everybody. 50 episodes. Can you believe it? Thank you, Genevieve Pearson, for coming up. Thank Chris Humphrey or Mumford or whatever.
Breakdown.
Oh, yeah.
Breakdown. Breakdown.
Aaron McGathy, Spencer Crittenden, Camille Nangiani. I'm Jeff Davis. Thank you, everybody here at Nerd Melt. Dan, you're going to keep going? You want to walk up? Dan Harmon, everybody!
Breakdown! 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 Yeah. All right, next week, we'll get it. It's $10. Just really think about it.